This is a CBC podcast.
Hey, I'm Craig Norris, and I want to invite you to check out the R330. It's kind of like Quirks and Quarks, except I don't talk about space or science or anything like that. Instead, I play the week's best Canadian indie music. Head over to cbcradio3.com for all of the info.
Hello, and welcome to the Vinyl Cafe podcast. We publish a new podcast every weekend. You can download the latest or subscribe to the Vinyl Cafe podcast at cbc.ca/podcasting. This week on the show, Dave goes to the dentist.
It was inevitable that the chocolates would have come from Mary Turlington. She said they had soft centers, said Dave. I don't remember that, said Morley. I don't remember her saying anything about chocolate, except that they were her favorites. Her favorite creams, said Dave. She said creams. I don't remember that, said Morley. Are you trying to say this was her fault? Then she leaned forward and she whispered, do you think it's a plot? It was a Sunday afternoon, one of those sunny Sundays when you suddenly believe that you might make it to the end of the winter after all. The sky, bright blue, the world, all light. Dave was lying on the couch, and he was clutching a hot water bottle. Wasn't sunny or light by the couch. By the couch, it was gloomy and heavy. Could have been raining by the couch. Dave dropped the hot water bottle on the floor and said, this isn't helping. Morley shrugged and kept reading. Morley was reading the paper. Morley said, there's a guy here who says Lady Bird Johnson was on the grassy knoll. They were actually talking about a box of chocolates, some dark and glistening, others soft and milky, chocolates wrapped in shiny green and gold foil. Actually, they were talking about one particular chocolate, an almond toffee crunch. Mary Turlington had brought the chocolates when she and Bert had come for dinner. She said they were creams. Imagine, said Morley, sighing as she folded the paper and headed for the kitchen. Lady Bird Johnson. Who would have guessed? Okay, so he bit into the chocolate harder than he should have. Certainly harder than he would have if he'd known it was an almond toffee crunch. He didn't actually feel his tooth break. You'd think there'd be pain if you cracked a piece off one of your teeth. There was no pain. There was no sensation whatsoever. There was just suddenly something in his mouth that wasn't chocolate and wasn't toffee. Dave was sitting at the dinner table with the Turlingtons when this chocolate moment happened, and to his credit, he tried to be discreet. He slipped the piece of something into his hand and from there into his pocket so he could examine it later. He sent his tongue, not his fingers, darting around his mouth to check for damage. It landed on a tooth at the back of his mouth, or more accurately, it landed where there used to be a tooth, and where there was tooth no more. Maybe 5 minutes passed. For 5 minutes, Dave sat at the dinner table, smiling vacantly at the conversation around him, while he explored this strange new place with his tongue. A disturbing turn of events, to be sure, but not an overwhelming one until the idea of infection awoke in him. For all Dave knew, things could be being sucked up through this hole directly into his brain. That couldn't be good. And then he was aware that somebody was calling his name. It was Morley. Dave, Morley was saying. And he looked up and noticed that everyone at the table was looking at him. And they all seemed to be expecting something from him. Dave smiled and reached for his water. It was a stall. Dave was trying to gather it up, trying to reconstruct the conversation that had been going on around him. Had he been thinking straight, Dave would have put the water down without taking a sip. But Dave wasn't thinking straight. So instead, still trying to stall, he brought the glass to his mouth. When the ice water hit the exposed tooth, it fell as if someone had driven an ice pick into his brain. For the briefest instant, his brain was the only thing that reacted. Mistake, thought his brain. Then the mouthful of water mixed with what was remained of the almond toffee chocolate fire hosed out of his mouth. And it arced across the table, and it hit Mary Turlington just above her bosom. That was Saturday night. Now it was Sunday afternoon, and there was still a good 18 hours before Dave could call the dentist, something he hadn't done for a good 10 years. Dr. Peter O'Hagan probably shouldn't have gone into dentistry in the first place. Dr. O'Hagan has a bit of the Irish in him, a deep, melancholic vein that would have best been left undisturbed. Might have remained so if he had chosen a less stressful profession. Every day when he headed to work, Dr. O'Hagan knew that someone was going to have something to say that would upset him. It wore him down. That sort of thing would wear anyone down week in and week out. But Peter O'Hagan kept grinding along, surrounded by patients who seemed to think that excavating tooth decay was something anyone could enjoy. At least once a week, somebody would mutter, "I can't believe I'm paying you to make my gums bleed." There were all sorts of whiners and flinchers, like Mrs. Struthers, who carried a bottle of eucalyptus to sniff while Dr. O'Hagan was working on her. She said it helped her gag reflex. It didn't. Or Leora Moore. Dr. O'Hagan just had to take a step towards Leora Moore and she would start to shake, even if she was there just for a checkup. And there was Dave. Dr. O'Hagan brought his melancholic streak to the union. Dave brought fear. Fear that was sown into his soul when he was a child. When he was a child and a patient of the infamous Dr. Regent Tom. Dr. Tom was the only dentist in the town of Big Narrows where Dave grew up. And Dr. Tom was a bully. It was Dr. Tom who told Dave he had soft teeth. Made it sound like an accusation, as if soft teeth were a sign of moral weakness. It was Dr. Tom who waved pliers in front of Dave's mouth and said, "If you don't do a better job brushing your teeth, I'm going to have to yank them out." It was Dr. Tom who didn't believe in anesthetic and always said the same thing whenever he hurt Dave. That didn't hurt now, did it? It was Dr. Tom who'd laid the battleground between Dave and the melancholic Peter O'Hagan. A relationship that had more lows than highs. The lowest moment being an appointment that had begun so hopefully. Dr. O'Hagan fitting Dave with his new audio headsets. That was 10 years ago. Dave lying back with the headsets over his ears, his eyes closed, cranking up Creedence Clearwater Revival as high as he could crank them. So absorbed with the novelty of the headsets that he actually forgot he was with the dentist. He actually drifted off. Then he woke up abruptly when he realized that somebody was stuffing things down his throat. Well, sadly, that's not quite true. Dave didn't actually wake up. What happened was he thought he woke up, but he was actually dreaming. He was dreaming that someone was stuffing things down his throat. It was Dr. Tom. Dr. Tom was wearing a goalie mask in the dream like that kid in the horror movie. And he was stuffing a full set of bath towels down Dave's throat. It was when the nurse said, "Get the washcloth in there too," that Dave woke up. Or he thought he woke up. If he had actually woken up, he might have still bitten Dr. O'Hagan, but he wouldn't have clamped down the way he did. He wouldn't have got his finger between his teeth and started shaking his head back and forth like a dog fighting for a bone. You would have thought he would have been woken by Dr. O'Hagan's scream. But remember, Dave had the headsets on, and he had them cranked up loud, so he didn't wake up there and he didn't see the nurse running into Dr. O'Hagan's side or hear the other patients fleeing from the waiting room. That was the last time Dave had been to Dr. O'Hagan, 10 years ago. But now he needed a dentist, and he didn't know anyone else. So last Monday evening, when Dave arrived at Dr. O'Hagan's office with his broken tooth, both of them were anxious. Dr. O'Hagan was surprised to see Dave's name on the appointment list. 10 years is a long time between appointments. He had assumed he was never going to see Dave again. Dr. O'Hagan's secretary knew this. She always scheduled Dave at the end of the day. And she did that last Monday, too. She knew after Dave, Dr. O'Hagan would be finished for the day. "Where did he get our new address?" he asked his secretary peevishly. By lunchtime, Dr. O'Hagan's back was aching. And then he missed lunch. So by the time Dave dropped reluctantly into Dr. O'Hagan's chair at 5:45, Dr. O'Hagan was starving and cranky. Dave was already lying on the chair when Dr. O'Hagan came into the room. They had both decided independently it would be best if they didn't mention their last appointment. And neither of them did. "I have a broken tooth," said Dave, pointing with his forefinger. Dr. O'Hagan picked up a prod. "You aren't going to touch it," said Dave, pulling back. "It's the one that hurts." Dr. O'Hagan arched his aching back, and he took a deep breath. Short time later, Dave's mouth was frozen, and Dr. O'Hagan was working on the broken tooth with his drill, cleaning up the decay so he could patch it. When the drill was running, Dr. O'Hagan could ignore Dave's flinching and thrashing. But each time he stopped, Dave would begin mumbling. His mouth was full of cotton, so he was totally incoherent. To Dr. O'Hagan, Dave sounded vaguely threatening. Dave and Dr. O'Hagan were half an hour into their ordeal when things took a dramatic turn. One moment, Dr. O'Hagan was pressing the drill into a soft patch in Dave's tooth. The next moment, Dave's tooth was falling into pieces right in front of his eyes. Dr. O'Hagan gasped. Dave heard the gasp and gripped the armrests harder, but he didn't open his eyes. Dr. O'Hagan could feel the muscles tensing around his neck and shoulders. He still had a pleasant smile plastered on his face. "How do you tell a patient that the tooth you were working on just self-destructed? How do you tell them that you just made their tooth worse instead of better?" "Ah," said Dr. O'Hagan, "this might take a little longer than we'd thought. There's not much tooth to work with anymore." Dr. O'Hagan's back was throbbing. Dr. O'Hagan was faint with hunger. Dr. O'Hagan needed to pee. This wasn't going the way he wanted it to go. Dave was now clenching the chair tightly enough to leave an imprint of his fingernails in the imitation leather. He seemed to be whimpering. Dr. O'Hagan said, "Let's put a little more freezing in." He was going to do a nerve block. It would freeze a quarter of Dave's face and half his tongue. Dr. O'Hagan began to drill again. Dave winced. Dr. O'Hagan wiped the sweat from his brow. Dr. O'Hagan said, "Maybe you'd like a bit more freezing." "I want it," slurred Dave, nodding his head up and down. "Keep it coming." Dr. O'Hagan was fighting for his life here. He had started this thing and it had gone wrong. But there was no stopping now. They had to finish. Dr. O'Hagan looked at Dave and tried to judge whether, in fact, Dave could take more xylocaine. He drew up a needle. And then he thought, what the hell? And he bent over and he stretched his arm behind him. And he plunged it into his own aching back. And then he drew another one and gave it to Dave. And soon enough, it was over. "It's over," said Dr. O'Hagan. "We're finished." He sprayed Dave's mouth with mouthwash, wintergreen, and Dave felt a wave of release wash over him. He brought his hand up to his face. His tongue felt like a pillow. He pulled himself unsteadily out of the dentist's chair. "Are you okay?" asked Dr. O'Hagan. Dave said, "I'm going home to have a shrink." Me too, said Dr. O'Hagan. Xylocaine works by changing the electrolyte balance of a nerve. You change the electrolyte balance, and that changes the nerve's capability to transmit pain. When Dave left Dr. O'Hagan's office, he had enough xylocaine in him to immobilize a rhinoceros. Dave was exhausted, but he was feeling no pain. He was stopped by the ride program half a kilometer from Dr. O'Hagan's office. He rolled down his window, and he smiled at the officer shining the flashlight in his face. At least he thought he was smiling. It was difficult to tell. He seemed to have lost all control of his facial muscles. He was drooling. Good afternoon, Oshifer. The policeman leaned forward and tried to smell Dave's breath. Wintergreen. Oldest trick in the book, thought the cop. Had anything to drink tonight, sir, said the officer, leaning even closer. Dave had to concentrate to speak clearly. I haven't had a shing to shrink, he said. It didn't come out the way he wanted it to come out. Policeman nodded pleasantly and said, could you wait here a moment, sir? And he walked away. He came back with another officer. The second officer asked Dave to step out of the car. Then he asked Dave to walk a straight line, 1 foot in front of the other. Dave walked in a straight line, more or less. He asked Dave to touch his nose. Dave reached up to his face. His nose seemed to have disappeared. Dave frowned and felt around his face. He couldn't find his nose. He looked at the cop and he grinned nervously. He said, my face is completely numb. And then he stuck his finger in his eye. Here? He asked uncertainly. As Dave tried to locate his nose, the officer brought a small machine out to the cruiser. He asked Dave to blow. His levels were fine. Well, it's not alcohol, said the first cop to the second. But this guy is clearly higher than a kite. They put Dave in the back of the car. They said, we don't think you should be driving, sir. That was when Dr. O'Hagan drove by. When he saw the flashing police lights and spotted Dave standing beside the cruiser, his arms outstretched, slowly moving his extended finger past his nose and into his eye, Dr. O'Hagan pulled over on the side of the road. He was about a block from the police car, and he parked there and he watched in his rearview mirror as the officer hustled Dave into the cruiser, and they drove away. Dr. O'Hagan smiled as the police car drove by him. Bye-bye, he said under his breath. Maybe there was justice in the world after all. Maybe they would lock up Dave, the biter, forever. That thought lasted about 5 seconds. It wasn't Dave's fault after all. It wasn't Dave who had all those years ago filled out the application to dental college. Dave wasn't with Dr. O'Hagan when he stood in the college guidance office and put back the pamphlet on art history and picked up the one on dentistry instead. When Dave stumbled out of the dental chair half an hour ago, he had immediately stuck his finger in his mouth and moved it over the smooth, rebuilt tooth. And his brow had softened and he had mumbled a rather pathetic thank you before he lurched out the door. Dr. O'Hagan sat beside the road and he reached out, he turned on the car stereo. Vivaldi's Four Seasons was playing Spring. He reclined his car seat and he closed his eyes and he listened to the music. When the final strain of the Allegro sounded, Dr. O'Hagan sat back up. He was humming contentedly as he pulled into the police station parking lot, about to explain to the officers inside about the wonders of xylocaine. Thank you very much.
That was Stuart McLean, and that's from the Vinyl Cafe. Stuart McLean and special musical guests Megan Smith and Matt Anderson are on tour right now. They have stops this week in Halifax, Nova Scotia. You can check the website for all the details. That's vinylcafe.com.
For more on all of our CBC podcasts, head to cbc.ca/podcasting.